President Obama marked this Veterans Day with American troops at the Yongsan Army Garrison in South Korea.
Your country is going to be there for you. That is the commitment I make to you as Commander-in-Chief. That is the sacred trust between the United States of America and all who defend its ideals.
At Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia, Vice President Joe Biden placed a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknowns. And ceremonies were also held across the United Kingdom for Armistice Day, commemorating the end of World War I. In London, buglers mark the end of 2 minutes of silence observed across the UK each November 11th to honor the nation's war dead. We want to spend a few minutes on this Veterans Day with a story from the home front. It starts on June 7th, 2010, when five members of Gator Company, 101st Airborne Division, were killed by a massive roadside bomb in Afghanistan. It goes without saying that for the families back home in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, this was a terrible tragedy. But due to the speed of modern communication, the fear of not knowing precisely what happened was somehow made worse. Once upon a time, the bad news would arrive suddenly via telegram or by that dreaded knock on the door. But today, military families are in constant touch with their loved ones. So when something goes wrong, as it did last June, word can leak out via email, cell phones, and Facebook. Families must then endure the agony of knowing that something happened but not knowing if their loved one is safe. Washington Post Pentagon reporter Greg Jaffe tells the dramatic story of what happened to Gator Company. He joins us now. And Greg, welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
So your piece begins with Emily Franks, the wife of a soldier serving in Afghanistan, receiving a call from Afghanistan. What did she hear?
She gets a call from a soldier over there saying something's happened. It's a mass casualty event. In other words, we've lost more than one person. I think he essentially told her that there were as many as five dead and that they thought that one of them might be the company commander. Mm. And he was sort of giving her a heads up to prepare. She runs something called the Family Readiness Group for the company. And essentially that makes her sort of the nerve center for the company's spouses.
I see. So she learns that the company commander is dead. She also learns that her husband has survived, correct?
Right. Her husband's safe. And they think the company commander's dead. They don't know at that time, in part because there's a lot of confusion. It was a big explosion. It was a little bit difficult to identify the bodies.
And then the next call she gets is from someone that she knows on the base, right?
As she's talking to the caller from Afghanistan, her cell phone beeps. She looks down, and it's the company commander's wife who's calling her.
Oh, boy.
And she assumes that the company commander's wife must be calling her essentially to tell her that her husband's dead.
Hmm. But so now she's in this terribly awkward and sad situation of knowing that perhaps this woman's husband is dead, but she can't tell her. She doesn't want to tell her. So she's in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, she knows she absolutely can't tell her, and she has to, you know, act as though nothing is going on. The company commander's wife doesn't know that anything has happened. And Emily Franks, the spouse we're talking about, I mean, she is one of these people who has ice water running through her veins. She's a very cool customer and pulls it off.
Now, the way this is supposed to work, and you explain this in the piece, when there's a death in the field, the military temporarily shuts down internet access to deployed units who suffer a casualty to give the military time to inform the next of kin. But in this case, and I guess in a lot of cases, word sort of leaks through. So the military isn't in a position to confirm, but the families have a sense that something's happened, and then the rumor mill gets going. So explain what happened next in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what happens. It's called a blackout. To try and prevent word from leaking back, they shut down the internet. They can't really shut down the phones because a lot of the soldiers these days will just buy portable, cheap Afghan cell phones, which you can buy for about $15. You know, when there's one fatality, they can get out to the next of kin fairly quickly and notify them. When there are five, it can take a long time. In this case, they were trying to find 17 next of kin before they could say anything. So relatively quickly, word leaks back via Facebook, via cell phone, text messages, you know, that something bad has happened. And even without it leaking back, it doesn't take the spouses very long to notice that no one's getting their morning cell phone call. None of the soldiers abroad seem to be posting or updating their status on Facebook. It doesn't take that long for people to figure out that there's a blackout, and word spreads fairly quickly that there's a blackout.
You have a detail in the story where some of these military wives are, it's almost a kind of macabre number game that they're left playing. I mean, they know that five soldiers were killed. They know that there are several dozen people in the unit, so chances are pretty good that their husband survived, but they can't be sure. It's awful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it starts off about 120 people in the infantry company. You know, it's about, you know, three dozen, slightly more than that, wives. Yeah, and they all know that, you know, there's a chance that their husband is wounded or killed once they realize that it's their husband's company. But they don't know who. Now, in a lot of cases, or in some cases, you know, some soldiers will actually, before they go into blackout, will, if they've got an Afghan cell phone, they'll text message home, going to blackout, I'm safe. The military strongly discourages that. I mean, more than discourages that. I mean, it's prohibited, but some soldiers will do that.
Now, you mentioned that Emily Franks and the commander's wife, Kitty Hines, are part of something called the Family Readiness Group. Tell us about these family readiness groups. How do they operate in a case like this when word that something has gone wrong in the field occurs?
Yeah, I mean, they're interesting things. I mean, because they've really existed since the early 90s. And even before that, they sort of evolved out of, you know, wives club, officers' wives club and enlisted wives clubs teas. And they essentially become a way of getting information out. They sort of work as a sort of quasi-support group. And they're, for the most part, at the company level, they're exclusively volunteer-run. At the battalion level, which is the next echelon up, there are about 700 soldiers in the battalion. There will be a battalion FRG, family readiness group, and that has one sort of paid clerical worker who helps maintain the lists. But they're very sort of informal organizations designed to pass information, quasi-support networks. In some cases, like this company, they work very well. In other cases, they don't work as well, I think.
Washington Post Pentagon reporter Greg Jaffe and his story about Gator Company. Last June, five soldiers from that Army unit died in Afghanistan. What followed was a nightmare for the families of the soldiers at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, because the military shuts off all communication from the troops in the field in cases like this. So the soldiers can't call or email. They can't post anything on Facebook. So, Greg, in the hours after these deaths, the Army is racing to find the next of kin of all these soldiers while the Gator Company families back home are in a panic. And the woman at the center of your story, Emily Franks, who knows her husband is still alive, is left to try to control the panic because she helps run Gator Company's family readiness group. Greg, it must be agonizing. So describe what's happening there.
Over the course of the day, the wives are beginning to realize something terrible has happened. By late afternoon, there are stories on the Associated Press wire saying that there are 10 dead in Afghanistan that day. At that point, it had been the bloodiest day in Afghanistan for U.S. troops of the year, and that five had died in a bombing in Kunar province, which is where their husbands were. So that evening, once they notify the first spouse, which happens around 5 p.m., and then a couple of the others, one of the spouses posts on Facebook that her husband was killed. And that actually draws the circle a little bit closer in terms of who it is, because you're really starting to narrow the field.
Hmm. And finally, the Army decides to release the names of the dead, even before the final soldier's next of kin is located. Why did the Army brass decide to do it that way?
You know, word was leaking out. I mean, spouses were calling the rear detachment headquarters literally until 3:30 in the morning. And the rear detachment commander, you know, just couldn't tell them anything. And the panic and concern and worry was building. And the next morning, you know, they held off till about 10:30, but there were still essentially one, maybe two, depending on how you define it, who they couldn't find. And it's tricky in this day and age where families are dispersed. You have mothers and fathers who are quite often divorced and living in different cities. And actually, believe it or not, they use, in many instances, use Facebook and check people's Facebook updates to try and figure out where they're at.
Hmm. So you also described Emily Franks as a member of this family readiness group, spending a lot of time that day on the phone, talking to other wives as part of a phone tree. And you describe a sort of script that she has to read from. What does she have to say?
Once they decide to put word out, essentially they have a phone tree to say, you know, Emily will call and say, your soldier's safe, but, you know, the unit has suffered a casualty. And then she'll read the script of essentially the bare facts, you know, who died, how they died, just so people know what happened. And it, essentially it stops the worry and concern.
What was so powerful about your story is it was one of those stories that really tells the story of the way this war or any war gets played out on the home front or sort of has an impact on the home front. And I'm just wondering if you can talk about the pressure that someone like Emily Franks, that this puts her under.
It is an immense amount of stress, an immense amount of responsibility. I mean, spouses call her for everything from help changing a battery in their car to finding childcare because they've got to go someplace or, you know, whatever crisis of the day it is. A lot of whom are, you know, young spouses away from home for the first time, you know, in their early 20s. And I think she feels a need to sort of help them. She's in her early 30s. And like I said, it's a very solid head on her shoulders and is the kind of person who wants to help. So she ends up doing a lot of that. And then a lot of trying to just to calm and ease people's worries. And then after a casualty, you know, helping to make sure that the widows are taken care of, that they have food, that they have the support that they need, that they're getting the information and help from the Army that they need.
Well, it must be a huge relief on most days for families to be able to be in touch with their loved ones several times a day via cell phone, Facebook, Skype, whatever it is. But it seems as though the military and the way it deals with keeping families informed of this kind of bad news needs to rethink its policies given modern communications. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but folks must be thinking about this.
They are. You know, I think they'll say that the process works pretty well and it works okay if you've just got a one or two fatality event and you can get to everybody quickly and notify everybody at once. When you have five and, you know, that you've got to notify and the widows, you can't tell a widow not to ask for help from her friends on Facebook. Then word gets out very fast. So you've got this sort of lightning fast spread of information via Facebook and technology, and then this very slow, sacred process of notifying the families, which, you know, is getting an officer, a casualty notification officer, and a chaplain, getting them in uniform, getting them prepared, and delivering them to the doorstep of in this case, 17 next of kin, knocking on the door and telling them spread all throughout the country. And that's a very slow process. So on the one hand, you've got information moving literally at the speed of light via Facebook, and then you've got this slow, you know, very, in the military's mind, sacred ritual that can't be bungled, you know. It's got to go according to this script.
Now, your story ends with Emily Franks shopping in Atlanta this past summer with her mother-in-law. She gets a call that she needs to return to Fort Campbell. She's obviously worried it might be her husband. What happened?
She drives back, drops her mother-in-law off, actually picks up her mom who lives just outside Atlanta. And as she's pulling into her parking lot outside of Fort Campbell, you know, she notices an unfamiliar car parked in front of her apartment building, a late model sedan. And you know, she has this moment of panic that, oh, my God, they're here for me. As she pulls up, she notices that there's no one in the car. I think that night she thinks about, do I say something to my mom, who was with her at the time, about what she was going through and what she thought had happened? And she doesn't. I think she waits till the next morning and tells her mom what had happened.
Oh, boy. What a burden. Well, Greg, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Yeah, thank you.
Greg Jaffe is the Pentagon reporter for The Washington Post. He's also author of The Fourth Star, Four Generals and the Epic Struggle for the Future of the United States Army, which is now out in paperback. You can find a link to his story about Gator Company at hereandnow.org.